This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by State Representative Lori Ehrlich. And Representative, good to see you again, and Happy New Year, I guess, right?
Happy New Year to you too, Bill, and great to be with you. Always appreciate updating you on what's going on, and maybe I can give you a preview of some coming attractions.
Yeah. Well, you are incredibly busy as a legislator, as so many of our North Shore legislators are, but a bill that I think is carrying over from last year, certainly a lot of work you've done on the bill, is the sexual assault bill on college campuses. But maybe you can fill us in on some of the details there. Where is the bill at, and what is the bill?
Yeah, in the life cycle of a typical bill filing, we see, you know, at first the introduction of an interesting idea, it gets some talk, and people, you know, say, oh, that's a good issue. You know, then it comes back again, and now people are really excited about it. And then this is actually the third session that I've filed a bill on campus climate sexual assault. And the bill has really reached a critical mass. I'm really happy to report. The bill, we're right now at the beginning of a two-year session, and bills have just been filed and co-sponsored. And I have the honor and excitement of reporting to you that over half of the legislature has signed on as a co-sponsor of my bill, which deals with campus climate surveys, and another bill on sexual assault that tries to protect students, you know, vis-a-vis Title IX, and you know, when they get into the legal proceedings. So both of those bills have well over 100 co-sponsors out of a 200-member body, and they are really off to a great start. Tomorrow, I will be speaking at Harvard Law School about this bill. Joining me will be several of my colleagues, the Speaker of the House, Robert DeLeo, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, and many of the student organizers who have really taken this issue up and are making waves at the State House. They've held rallies at the State House. They've reached out to the representatives, and we hope to see this over the line in short order.
Well, that's very encouraging to see the co-sponsor numbers as they are. That's probably a very good sign. Mm-hmm. As far as the bill, for our listeners, though, if I'm not mistaken, because I know we've talked about this before, it kind of instructs schools as to how to investigate these kinds of crimes. Does that sound right? Is this coming back to me here?
Well, it is coming back to you. there are actually two bills. The bill that I filed, it really just requires a survey to be given out to everybody on campus. And it's trying to assess the climate on campus for sexual assault. What that represents is a tool for administrators to guide their own policies. You know, maybe a place on campus will be identified as unsafe. Maybe something needs, maybe students need more support or whatever. It's a tool for administrators. But at the same time, it's also a way to find out if we have unsafe campuses in Massachusetts. There's no cost to the schools. A model survey will be provided to all of them if they want, or they can construct their own. It has to be approved by the commissioner in Massachusetts, and all of the results will be posted online as well. So as a consumer, as a parent, as a student, you can look online to see if the campus that you're choosing is a safe place to attend. And so it empowers you with information. The other bill deals with it's a little more complicated, and it's also unfolding with the backdrop of the Trump administration seeking to loosen rules and make it harder for victims of sexual assault to come forward. So this is a very timely topic and actually a very urgent matter. So I'm really excited to carry these bills forward again with my colleague on the other bill is Rep. Tricia Farley Bouvier, who is a rep from Pittsfield. And the two of us, who actually chair the Women's Caucus Working Group on Sexual Assault, we each have a bill, and we're working together to make sure that these bills pass. Last session, my bill received a unanimous vote in the House and made some progress in the Senate. And I think the same is true for the other bill as well. So it's just a matter of let's finish it off.
I know you made some headlines here recently with your local media bill and discussion on local media. And what is it fair to say, saving local media? Tell me more about that one. Obviously, local newspapers and so on like the sound of that because of its. The newspapers are a struggling business. Local media, I would imagine, also kind of a struggling business and so on, with the media consumption changing so fast and in the way that those of us that consume local news will get it, I suppose. And then you have the generational differences as well. So tell me about your bill and your interest in this.
Well, for quite some time now, I've been very concerned reading stories and hearing reports about newsrooms being shuttered, and also a consolidation of ownership of local outlets in the hands of, a few companies. Specifically, I can chat about two of those companies. One of them is Gatehouse Media, which actually owns quite a few local newspapers in Massachusetts. And the other one is Digital First. And Digital First Media is the owner now of the Boston Herald. But it also owns some other newspapers in Massachusetts. And Digital First specifically, I know, has a storied history of shuttering newsrooms, either completely laying off a ton of newspaper reporters and others, or just shuttering them entirely. And what's at the root, I think, of some of this is that both of those companies are actually owned by hedge funds. And a hedge fund has a different goal, a hedge fund is motivated to make money for its shareholders. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But news gathering and news production tends to have lower profit margins than a typical hedge fund. So my concern with that is that the gritty business of gathering news and journalistic integrity isn't always as much of a moneymaker as some of the profit margins of these companies. Now, locally, I haven't seen too many newsrooms shuttered, but I have seen a decline in staff. Elsewhere in Massachusetts, we are seeing newsrooms being closed. I heard from a friend of mine from Attleboro and some of my colleagues in Western Mass that they are concerned that their communities aren't getting local coverage. And what that means for a community, local people, well, everybody loves their local news outlets. They love hearing what's going on around them. They can't possibly go to every school committee meeting in their busy lives. So they count on their local news outlets to go to those meetings and report on what's happening. They even state government, keeping an eye on state government. I think, the local news outlets play an important role in informing everybody on what's happening in their own communities. So I think it's a tremendous loss if these newsrooms are shuttered, and it also represents a tremendous loss for our democracy.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, and I don't want to mention names and so on here necessarily, but in local media, but you're right, news staff has shrunk. I think that that sometimes it's ownership sometimes is from outside the area. That's nothing new, I suppose. But you're right. I didn't realize about the fact that you have ownership, ownerships of some of these companies, are really not news organizations, as they might have been in years past, where you own a newspaper, you own a television, and even though you were concerned about maybe they own too much, but they were news organizations. I see that now. But sometimes some of these publications kind of hang on because there's one individual that wants to keep it going. And I think that is the case in some publications in the area.
Yeah, and I think, you know, let me just explain what the bill does, because I think some people get concerned when they hear government talking about the press.
Yeah.
This is not a takeover. this is not anything like that. This is merely a discussion. It's a commission that will be comprised of 17 experts in the field of local journalism. And it is merely to have a discussion, to explore possible viable business models going forward. It will not have any mandates attached to it. It will be purely to inform and discuss. And I think, I think it's a really important discussion. It has generated so much interest. Many people from around the state have reached out to me to ask if they can be on the commission. I obviously didn't think of everybody who could possibly serve well. So it will be up to the committee the bill is assigned to make changes to the commission as I've laid it out. But what's been really interesting from a local standpoint is I've heard from a lot of local newspapers, even one in our vicinity here, very excited to tell me about their business model and how they're surviving.
Okay.
And that's been a very interesting discussion. There will be a lot to dig into here. There are some business model experiments out there with nonprofits, looking at a nonprofit model. There's a big discussion about how philanthropy can play a role in making sure that people remain informed, and also different ways of delivering the news as well. We have to make sure that advertising, advertising is something, that whether the digital advertising model works or not is a question that will have to be discussed by the group, and where we're going with all of this, because, our democracy depends on an informed citizenry, and we actually have the press written into our Constitution. So, so it's important that it survives, and I'm excited for the conversation ahead.
Yeah, good point. I'm glad you pointed out that what it's all about. It's about the conversation. But I'm thinking as you were talking that there was at least a paper in Malden. Maybe Medford, local daily paper, mm-hmm. that's no longer around anymore. Passed away, if you will, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we're so used to having if you look up and down the North Shore, Gloucester has their own paper, Newburyport mm-hmm. does, Salem has a paper covering, a lot of your communities, Marblehead, Swampscott, and so on, and Peabody. Mm-hmm. But they have that daily paper where, people, if they want it, they can get it, get that local news. And, it's hard to think of not having those papers around. That's kind of how I look at it.
Right. And the interesting local story, I think, is the Lynn item. It's a daily. It's been around since 1877. And was facing some hard times. And what happened was a group of local investors who all have a stake in the community and making sure that the paper survived came in and bought it and have been running it for, a couple years or so.
At least, yeah.
And the paper is still every day. Paper's out there. And, they've taken some flying leaps in the website. And, it's still available online free of charge.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting example of community stakeholdership and keeping the business afloat for the good of the community.
Yeah. And I know their business model, they have other sources of income as well, pointing out, but yet there was that interest to keeping that daily paper, of a few people to keep it going. Good point. Yeah. Well, you have a couple of other acts or bills that you filed. Maybe you can share with us regarding environmental issues, which you're very much in the forefront of, and energy issues as well. Maybe share a few notes on those.
Okay, so this is a topic I've long enjoyed covering from long before I was even a state representative, environment and energy. This session, I have two brand new filings in this area, and each one is seemingly complex. There's a lot of words in the bills and a lot that they do, but I can.
As you look at me.
I know, but I'm able to sum them up for you and everybody listening. So Don't tune out. Stay with us here. One we've nicknamed the Future Act. And Future actually stands for an act for a utility transition to using renewable energy. And this bill was very much inspired and spurred on by the explosions up in the Merrimack Valley that actually tragically took the life of one young man. A lot of the issues around gas, natural gas, have come to the fore because of that, but it's also been something that I've worked on for a decade or more. With the nickname Gas Leaks Girl, I have had two of my bills already passed into law that deal with gas safety. Yeah. So this just builds on that, tightens up some of that language, and also recognizes that burning explosive gas in our homes may not be the best idea and also don't make sense in the long term as we're facing not only climate change bearing down upon us, but also hard mandates in the law from the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2008 that require us to transition off of fossil fuels. So there are very substantial steps that this bill requires, and it also it looks at oversight of our gas utilities. So the organization in charge of oversight is the Department of Public Utilities, and we like to say that this bill puts the public back in the DPU. It gives them enforceable and real oversight. It also has a gas safety component to it, where we're requiring winter patrols in the cold weather. We are, requiring the repair of gas leaks that are known, and many other things in there. Also, notification to communities if gas leaks are detected. There's also a municipal piece to this, where we are empowering our municipal governments or the municipalities to actually have standing in legal cases against the gas companies. Because right now, they express the will of the citizens in a community, and they are not able to have a voice in legal proceedings. So that is a piece of this, as well as a few other things. But stay tuned for more. This is really the first discussion I've had on this bill, and I look forward to talking more about it as it goes through the process. The other bill that you mentioned, this one's easier, and we'll have I'll have less to say, but it's no less important. Governor Baker, thankfully, has announced a regional approach to carbon emissions from our transportation system. This has been known as TCI, which is the Transportation Climate Initiative. And what the governor is proposing is to join 9 states and Washington, D.C. in a regional approach, which will mimic or copy what is known as REGI for power plants. So that's the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is also a regional approach. It's been very successful. It's been in use over a decade. And it's a great model to inspire us for reining in transportation emissions. So it will also generate money. So the TCI bill will help guide to make sure that the money that is generated gets to good transportation projects in areas where they're needed. So it just puts some guardrails on this initiative that's unfolding that I completely support, and which should help clean up what amounts to about a third of our state's emissions.
Representative Larelick, there's so much information there. Folks will have to listen twice. Especially even if they're taking notes on this. We should have notes available on this post, by the way, in case people want to, an outline of all this information. But anything else to share with us? Just I know we can check back soon again, I hope. But anything else you want to share with us about the ongoing your work at the State House?
Well, this is the very beginning of the session, so I look forward to coming back, and I wholeheartedly endorse listening to this show at least twice and all of the other shows that Bill does. Thank you. All right.
Thanks for the endorsement. There we go. And that's State Representative Lori Ehrlich. I'm Bill Newell, and this is MSONewsSports.com.